Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Philadelphia supports WHYY. Patients lead busy lives while fighting cancer, working, raising families, and doing the things they love. CTCA helps patients maintain their quality of life by strengthening their immune systems while in treatment. CTCA's integrated approach to cancer treatment includes conventional cancer treatment combined with nutritional counseling, organic cuisine, naturopathic and chiropractic medicine, physical therapy, and other important treatments. More at cancercenter.com.
The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has suspended the law license of State Attorney General Kathleen Kane. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. WHYY's Dave Davies explains why the move will not cost Kane her job, at least for now.
Kane's been in a heap of trouble for a while now. She faces a list of criminal charges stemming from her alleged leak of secret investigative material to embarrass an adversary. The Supreme Court's disciplinary board asked the justices to suspend her license, and since the state constitution requires that the attorney general be a member of the bar, it was anticipated that the loss of her law license might force Kane from office. But it doesn't, apparently. Duquesne University law professor Bruce Ledowitz says lawyers with suspended licenses can't practice, but they're still members of the bar. Kane, he says, falls in a kind of constitutional loophole.
All she has to be is a member of the bar, which she still is. That's all the Constitution says. If the framers had thought about the possibility of suspension, they undoubtedly would have said that she has to be a member of the bar in good standing.
So the Supreme Court recognized that even with a suspended license, Kane meets the constitutional requirement to hold office. But Ledowitz says there's a big problem. She can't legally perform the duties of her office without an effective law license.
Technically speaking, every assistant attorney general who's in court is standing in for the attorney general. In effect, it's always the attorney general herself who's in court on our behalf. That's why she has to be a member of the bar. The courts could say tomorrow, the attorney general's office no longer has authority to be here.
Ledowitz says he thinks the courts will ignore that for now, but he says the Supreme Court's suspension could spell a whole new kind of trouble for Kane. He says the justices were aware that the suspension would leave Kane technically qualified for office, but not able to function effectively, and that might trigger action by the state Senate.
I think that they were assuming that the Senate might very well take this opportunity to remove her on the grounds not that she's guilty of a crime, but that she doesn't have an effective law license.
The Senate can remove Kane with a two-thirds vote. Ledowitz, by the way, doesn't think Kane deserved the suspension, since she's been accused but not convicted of a crime. Kane says she's disappointed with the suspension, but in this statement read by spokesman Chuck Ardeau, she says she's pleased the court recognized her office can carry on its important work,
which will root out the culture of misogyny and racially, religiously offensive behavior that has permeated law enforcement and members of the judiciary for years.
Kane has long said she's innocent of the charges against her and the victim of retribution from men angry at her for exposing pornographic emails exchanged in the Attorney General's office. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Car owners beware. The Philadelphia Parking Authority is expecting to impound more than 1,000 vehicles ahead of Pope Francis's visit this weekend. City parking enforcers started towing last night. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports that the sweep will continue through the week.
Rick Steigerwalt from the Allentown area drives to Philly twice a week for medical appointments in Center City. This time he parked his Dodge Caravan in what he thought was a legal spot Sunday night, but then...
Evidently, I guess it must be the Pope Zone, and there's no papers or literatures up, but they're saying I was parked in a no zone.
Since money is tight for Steigerwalt, he spent his Monday morning trying to scrounge together enough funds to bail out his car.
My wife is on vacation, kids on vacation. Well, who do I got to call? Nobody.
Around 85% of the affected car owners have complied with the PPA's move or get towed deadline, says Deputy Executive Director Richard Dixon.
Each of the blocks where we towed, we made sure that there was a sign posted indicating when the parking prohibition would go into effect. I'm really sorry that anybody got towed.
The streets must be cleared on orders from the Secret Service. Dixon says it won't be a big moneymaker, with the parking authority waiving the $175 tow fee, but it's still levying a $76 fine on those who find their cars towed away.
People can call the number 686 snow to find out where they are and just take their keys and get the car.
Still, $76 was too much to pay for parking in what would otherwise be a legal spot, said William Scott as he drove his car out of a PPA lot in South Philly.
They laughing and joking, ain't doing nothing in there. The biggest ripoff in the city.
The towing continues until Friday morning. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Even if you're not Catholic, odds are you've heard a thing or two about Pope Francis. He makes news talking about climate change, homosexuality, and abortion. For some parishioners in the Delaware Valley, his progressive voice is a breath of fresh air. For others, not so much, as WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports.
It's not hard to find fans of Pope Francis. A poll put out by Quinnipiac University this summer shows that nearly 70% of Americans have a favorable or very favorable view of the Holy Father. It's nearly 90% among Catholics. On a boiling Sunday morning, parishioners trickle down the white stone steps of St. Vincent de Paul Church in the Germantown section of Philadelphia. Longtime resident Terry Higgins is one of the first to emerge after Mass. He says the Catholic Church has needed a leader like Pope Francis for some time, someone who is more plugged into the modern world.
I mean, it's 2015, it's new ways, new ideas, and he seems to have them. You can't turn your head to it no more, so you just got to look it straight in the eye and face it.
Fellow parishioner Jane Obodo says the church needs to be less rigid and more welcoming, and says Pope Francis seems to feel the same way.
No matter your sex, no matter what you are or where you are, God still loves you. So Catholics should be open to that, not just being a, we can do this, we can do that. We should, you know, in that way we can have a lot of people in the church.
Pope Francis has said, among other things, that it's not his place to judge gay priests and that the church should offer compassion to divorced or remarried parishioners, sacrilegious notions in some circles. Not everyone is thrilled with Pope Francis. Cleo Libinati is standing outside Holy Savior Parish in Plymouth Meeting, Montgomery County, about a 20-minute drive from the Philadelphia border. She comes here every Sunday to attend Latin Mass, a throwback to before the reforms ushered in by the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s. She says Pope Francis should not change the church to, quote, satisfy the masses.
We're not commies here. I'm not calling them communists, but I'm saying that's the wrong philosophy. It never brings peace. It can't, because it's not the way we're told to go.
It's an approach she thinks blurs the lines of what the faith deems right and wrong.
All that gray is a swamp that will pull you under and you will lose your life. And that's what's wrong today. You keep giving a little more, a little bit more, a little bit more. People don't know what is the truth anymore.
For Claire Cavoto, it's Francis's style of leadership that's troubling. She says it's too unpredictable, too off the cuff. Cavoto, for example, is all for Francis's call to help the poor, but praying next to an imam at a mosque in Istanbul?
That was kind of pushing the ticket a little. Like he's trying to make an impression, like I'm such a nice guy. And I don't think he has to be a nice guy. He has to be a leader. And he has to uphold the law.
Maureen O'Connell chairs the religion department at LaSalle, a Catholic university. She says the popes right before Francis, Benedict XVI and John Paul II, drew clear boundaries while running the church. O'Connell says Francis is a more ambiguous figurehead.
That can be understandably troubling because boundaries provide a kind of security, a clear sense of who the church is, who the people of God are. And so I think in some ways, Francis is inviting people to step out beyond those familiar boundaries, recognizing that they actually may, in instances, have been stifling the global church and the world church. And some people find that exciting and that invitation exciting, and some people find that understandably threatening.
O'Connell says despite being pegged a progressive, Pope Francis has not changed any of the church's central teachings or doctrines, including those around marriage, women's role in the church, or homosexuality. What's more, Francis's papacy is only 2 years old, so it's unclear how much change is in the works. In the meantime, though, he's definitely making people think. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Camden officials are reminding commuters that they'll need to purchase passes to park in that city for the Pope's visit. Some 8,500 parking spots on Camden's waterfront will be available for those heading to Pope Francis's visit Saturday and Sunday. To park there, pilgrims need to pay in advance, and parking is around $44 per weekend day, and cars cannot be left in the lots overnight. Drivers who do not have passes will not be allowed past a certain point in Camden. From the waterfront lots, visitors can take a ferry, a train, or walk over the Ben Franklin Bridge to see the papal events. Oversight of Penn State's athletics program is ending early because a monitor believes the university has made sufficient progress. This after a child sex abuse scandal highlighted shortcomings in its operations. Athletics Integrity Monitor Charles Sheeler announced today that the agreement involving Penn State, the Big Ten Conference, and the NCAA will conclude in December rather than in 2017. 68 degrees, gray skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. There's a 20% chance of showers overnight, low 58 degrees. Remaining cloudy tomorrow, Tuesday's high 76. Still ahead, filmmaker Milen Moreno says 82% of Spanish-only speakers in America favored the immediate withdrawal of troops from Vietnam.
They had skin in the game and understood the risks that there were to their children and whether it was a war that was really worth sacrificing their children for.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Franklin Institute supports WHYY. Presenting Vatican Splendors, featuring 2,000 years of Vatican history and a collection of historical and religious objects many never before on display to the public. From the sights and sounds of the Grand Basilica to a touchable cast of the hand of St. John Paul II, it's an opportunity to experience the grandeur of the Vatican. Open September 19th, only at the Franklin Institute. Tickets at fi.edu.
Newman University supports WHYY and encourages listeners to discover how a master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. There's an information session on October 1st at Newman's campus. Details at newman.edu. Newman University's master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling.
Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speakers Series, presented by Widener University, engaging the greater Philadelphia community in a dialogue around today's most important issues. This sold-out series gives audiences the chance to benefit from the perspectives of national and world leaders, authors, activists, humanitarians, thought leaders, and other influential personalities. PhiladelphiaSpeakerSeries.org, sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. We're some 36 hours out from the official change of seasons, and then only a few more days until the night sky provides a real treat for fall viewers. Joining me with a closer look is Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, what happens at 4:21 a.m. Wednesday?
Suddenly, as if a switch were thrown, we go from one season to the next.
Abracadabra.
Almost like that. It's not quite as much of a surprise. It's been happening here on this planet for quite some time. Before humans came along, of course, things just smoothly went from one day to the next. But now we recognize this because we keep time. And what time shows us is that we have, around this time of the year, an equal number of hours of daylight and darkness, and that's where we get the term equinox. The number of hours of nighttime, nox, is equal to the number of hours of daylight. And so it's at this point in the Earth's orbit where we begin to recognize a major seasonal change. And of course, we have all the usual cues about this. Probably the most obvious one of these is the change in the number of hours of daylight that we have. And, of course, we first begin to see this as sunsets come earlier and earlier. Now, this can be an advantage if you're a sky watcher because we're gaining hours of darkness in which we can observe. The other cool thing about it is that if you're an early morning riser, you can do a little sky observing then as well, since sunrise is coming after 6 a.m.
So let's take advantage of those early sunsets. Come Sunday night, there's a harvest moon to be seen, and then not seen.
Yes, on Sunday, we have this year's version of the Harvest Moon. It's that full moon that comes closest to the autumnal equinox. But this particular Harvest Moon is a very special one for two other reasons. The first reason is it just so happens that this full moon is happening at the closest perigee of all throughout the year for the moon. That means the closest of the closest approaches that the moon makes throughout the course of the year. But on top of that, it also turns out that we have a total lunar eclipse visible across the Western Hemisphere, and that will occur on Sunday night, beginning at about 8:45 in the evening and continuing on through 12:45 Monday morning. The middle of the eclipse, the portion in which you'll see the deepest color on the surface of the moon created by the Earth's shadow, that will come at around 10:45 in the evening.
When you refer to deep color, is it a creamier white or French vanilla or actual colors?
It is actually color, and it depends on where the moon passes through the Earth's shadow. In the case of what we might call a penumbral eclipse, an eclipse where the moon passes either above or below a line from the sun through the center of the Earth, through the center of the Earth's axis, if the moon passes through the outer portion of the moon's shadow, the penumbra, you'll get some color on the moon, but not very deep color. If the moon were to pass right through the darkest portion of the shadow, as this eclipse will do, then you get much deeper color on the surface of the moon. Now, of course, that central portion of shadow is bigger than the moon is. In fact, it's about 2.5 to 3 moon diameters. So in this particular instance, the moon is going to skirt the lower third of that dark portion of the shadow. And so we'll get significant color, but not the deepest color. It will be like a deep coppery color, maybe into a lighter brownish color. If we could get the moon right in the center of the shadow, it could get down to a deep brick red. Sometimes the situation can be that the moon is so dark, it almost seems to disappear from the sky. Won't be the case this time around, but that's okay. Lunar eclipses happen often enough that we'll have plenty more instances in the coming years when we may be able to get an eclipse that dark.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up with Outer Space Ways Incorporated.
During this Hispanic Heritage Month, WHYY-TV will broadcast the PBS documentary On Two Fronts, Latinos and Vietnam, looking at the legacy of Latino veterans and their families during the Vietnam War. Joining me in conversation is On Two Fronts director and producer Milen Moreno. Milen, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
What was your interest in taking us back now some 50 years?
Well, I'm just old enough to remember the drama and the trauma of that war. I was 8 when the POWs finally came home in February of 1973. And I had an uncle who went to Vietnam and came back, but not really. I had other uncles that were, you know, in the reserves. Or my father was drafted, but before we really were committing troops, so he didn't go. But, you know, it was something that affected my family personally. And when I had the opportunity to craft a story about the impact on my communities, the Latino communities, it felt like something that would be really worthwhile pursuing and trying to understand better.
Milen, the film opens with LBJ, President Johnson's famous speech back in August of 64, rationalizing going into combat based on the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Was there an initial clamor among Latinos to answer that call?
Oh, absolutely. There was the typical clamor of, you know, serving one's country. It was just like World War II, the initial response that, you know, we're here, we need to serve our country. And for many kids who grew up in communities where, you know, their high schools, they had military recruiters and not college counselors, there really wasn't a lot of alternatives to service. So why not go? Many of them said that. Why, you know, I know I'm going to have to go. Let's go now and get it over with, and maybe I can come home and go to college.
Because they didn't have other ready means to move on in society?
That's right. They didn't have access to college funds without the GI Bill. They didn't even have, you know, alternative jobs, many of them.
The documentary is comprised of archival footage and first-person accounts, including following two siblings who were on rather opposite sides of the conflict, one a POW and his sister who was a war protester. How did you come to find them?
I was very lucky to reach out when I was beginning to research this project to an historian at UC Davis, Lorena Oropeza, who had written a book about the Vietnam generation called Raza Si, Guerra No, you know, people yes, war no. And she profiled the siblings. Unfortunately for, you know, Everett Alvarez spent the entire war in prison in North Vietnam. And at home, his sister is, you know, begins by being very vocal and continues to always be vocal in her support of her brother. But as she and her mother learned more and more about the war and about the history of Indochina, began turning against the war itself. And so their journeys really mirror what is happening in the larger community. There's a huge split within the Latino community, just as there is across the country, in terms of those who favored and those who opposed the war. Was not really that different.
Certainly the film was completed before this election cycle, but can you comment on the legacy of Latinos serving the country and the current controversy over immigration, and specifically the call by some, notably Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, to build a wall?
I was just with several of the veterans from Arizona who are in my film, and they are, to a man, regardless of their politics, deeply frustrated with the statements that he's made, questioning the valor of POWs, for instance, you know, John McCain.
Most famously, yes.
Yeah. And also questioning the dedication and valor of Mexican-Americans in general. It's very painful to them, having risked their lives for their country.
Milan Moreno, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Milan Moreno is director and producer of On Two Fronts, which will air this coming Tuesday on WHYY-TV. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. In advance of the Pope's visit this weekend, 6ABC is airing the next in a series of documentaries on Philadelphia, this one focusing on the city's Catholic history. We'll get a preview on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Philadelphia supports WHYY. Patients lead busy lives while fighting cancer, working, raising families, and doing the things they love. CTCA helps patients maintain their quality of life by strengthening their immune systems while in treatment. CTCA's integrated approach to cancer treatment includes conventional cancer treatment combined with nutritional counseling, organic cuisine, naturopathic and chiropractic medicine, physical therapy, and other important treatments. More at cancercenter.com.
The Franklin Institute supports WHYY, presenting Vatican Splendors, featuring 2,000 years of Vatican history and a collection of historical and religious objects many never before on display to the public. From the sights and sounds of the Grand Basilica to a touchable cast of the hand of St. John Paul II, it's an opportunity to experience the grandeur of the Vatican. Open September 19th, only at the Franklin Institute. Tickets at fi.edu.